Good morning. This is 5 at 8. Today's Thursday, April 18th, 2024. And here is the day's top news. Your hosts are Linda Carlisle and Mark Overman. In this episode, we'll talk about a Russian missile strike in Chernihiv, Ukraine, Myanmar's ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi being relocated, Colorado passing a law to protect neural data, China's attempts to access critical U.S. infrastructure, and the financial impact of climate change on global income. Story number one, a Russian missile strike in Chernihiv. Ukraine killed and injured over 70 people, including children. President Zelensky stated that better air defenses could have prevented the attack. The strike damaged buildings, including a hospital and a higher education institute. Zelensky has been warning about Ukraine's lack of air defenses for months. The attack comes after a Russian airstrike destroyed a power plant in Kyiv region. Zelensky signed a law requiring men between 18 and 60 to register with the military. According to CNN, this tragic event highlights the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Could you believe it, Linda? The situation in Ukraine is truly devastating. President Zelensky's point about the insufficiency of Ukraine's air defenses is rather striking. It seems like history is echoing itself, seeing how Britain was initially ill-prepared against the Luftwaffe's bombing raids during World War II.
Yes, Mark. The parallels are indeed striking. But while history does offer us lessons, the context today is vastly different. The technology available to us now, from missile defense systems to early warning satellites, is leaps and bounds ahead of what was available during the World War II era. That said, having access to this technology and effectively deploying it are two very different things.
You hit the nail on the head. Access to technology and its effective deployment are crucial. It's a bit like having a high-end sports car but no fuel to run it. The best defense systems in the world are useless if you can't operate them effectively. And in the case of Ukraine, it seems they are lacking both the systems and the means to use them.
That's a good analogy, Mark. And it's not just about the technology, it's also about strategy, isn't it? Even the best technology cannot compensate for a lack of strategic planning and coordination. It's like having a map, but not knowing which path to take. The recent missile strike on Chernihiv is a tragic example of this.
Right, Linda. Strategy is key. Ukraine's situation also brings to light the critical role of international military partnerships. The support from partner nations in terms of equipment, intelligence, and personnel can be a game changer in such scenarios. It's like a lifeline that can pull a nation out of a dire situation.
Yes, Mark. International military partnerships can be a lifeline indeed. But they also come with their own set of complications, don't they? For instance, countries might be hesitant to get involved due to geopolitical implications. Or there might be disagreements about strategies and approaches. It's a complex web, really.
True, Linda. The geopolitical implications can sometimes make nations tread carefully. However, at the end of the day, the protection of human lives and sovereignty should be the ultimate goal. The world surely doesn't want another Chernihiv. Story number two. In a report from the New York Times, Myanmar's ousted civilian leader, Daw Aung San Suu Kyi, has been unexpectedly moved to an unknown location by the military junta due to a heat wave in the prison. The relocation has raised concerns about her safety as the military faces growing rebel forces. Many believe the military's stated concern for her welfare is not genuine. Aung San Suu Kyi, serving a 27-year sentence on corruption charges, is seen as a potential bargaining chip by her son amid escalating conflict near the capital. Would you believe it, Linda? The military junta in Myanmar relocating Daw Aung San Suu Kyi due to a heat wave. It just doesn't add up if you ask me.
The circumstances under which she's moved are suspicious, to say the least. This sort of action is reminiscent of previous instances of political manipulation. Remember Saddam Hussein's displacement during the Iraq War?
Absolutely. It's a classic case of creating a smokescreen, isn't it? And in the midst of an intensifying conflict, no less, the junta seems to be turning to desperate measures.
A similar pattern indeed, Mark. It's concerning, this use of leaders as potential bargaining chips, and the ethics of it, it's troubling.
And let's not forget about the trumped-up corruption charges against Suu Kyi. It's a classic tactic to keep opposition silenced, isn't it?
It's a worrying indication of how power dynamics can shift in these conflict-ridden regions. It's not just about military might. but also about controlling the narrative and using influential figures as pawns.
And it's the ordinary people who suffer the most in these power struggles. I just hope that SUU Key's safety isn't compromised in this political chess game.
I share your concerns, Mark. The international community needs to keep a close watch on developments in Myanmar. It's a complex and deeply worrying situation.
Story number 3. Consumers are used to their personal data being collected and sold by apps and digital services. With the rise of consumer neurotechnologies, even more intimate data is being gathered, such as brain activity. Colorado has passed a law to protect this neural data for the first time in the U.S. The law aims to ensure that highly sensitive brain data remains private and cannot be shared or sold without consent, as reported by the New York Times. There's a lot to unpack with this news about Colorado signing a new law to protect neural data. I mean, it's fascinating to see how technology is pushing the boundaries of what we consider to be personal data. I remember when email addresses were considered private. Now, we're talking about brain activity.
It's a clear reflection of how our understanding of privacy is constantly evolving with technological advancements. This is not just about protecting email addresses or social contacts anymore, but extending to our very thoughts and feelings. There's something intimately personal about that.
Right, Linda. And I think this raises some interesting questions about how we regulate technology. I mean, on one hand, I'm all for innovation and pushing the boundaries of what's possible. But at the same time, we need to ensure that companies are held accountable for how they use and share this sensitive information.
I agree, Mark. There's a need for robust regulatory frameworks that can keep pace with these rapid technological advancements. We've seen issues with data privacy before, where our laws and regulations just weren't equipped to handle the kind of digital data being collected. We don't want to be caught off guard again.
It's like we're playing catch-up with technology. But I have to say, I'm pretty impressed with Colorado's proactive approach here. It's a step in the right direction and sets an important precedent for other states to follow.
Definitely, Mark. And it's not just about setting a precedent, it's also about starting a conversation. A conversation about what kind of data should be considered sensitive and how we can ensure that this data is protected. It's a complex issue and one that society as a whole needs to engage with.
Couldn't agree more, Linda. I mean, imagine the possibilities if this kind of neural data falls into the wrong hands. It's not just about privacy anymore. It's about security, too. I think we can all agree that we don't want our thoughts and feelings being sold to the highest bidder.
That's a chilling thought, Mark. And it's not just about the potential misuse of data, but also about the implications for our understanding of self. As our thoughts and feelings become data points, we need to consider what this means for our understanding of identity, consciousness, and agency.
Story number 4. China is attempting to gain access to critical infrastructure in the United States to potentially threaten those systems in the event of a conflict, as reported by General Timothy Hoff, head of the U.S. military's Cyber Command. The National Security Agency director stated that China has increased its cyber efforts, prompting the U.S. to work harder to disrupt their activities. Last year, China was discovered trying to access critical infrastructure in Guam and the continental U.S. through a hacking network called Volt Typhoon. General Hoff warned that China's actions indicate their intention to use cyberspace in a crisis, posing an urgent military threat to the U.S. Source, The New York Times. Is this not incredibly worrisome, Linda? We're seeing China, a major world power, actively trying to infiltrate our critical infrastructure. It's like a ticking time bomb, just waiting for the right moment to explode.
It's a cause for concern. This state-sponsored cyber espionage represents a shift in the battlefield. It's not about physical boundaries or traditional warfare tactics anymore. We're in an era where a single line of code can potentially wreak unprecedented havoc. It's not only about the immediate disruption, but also the long-term implications. Imagine if these infiltrations compromise our power grids, water systems, or communication networks. The ripple effects could be catastrophic.
That's pretty scary, to be honest. And this isn't just hypothetical anymore, right? I mean, they've already tried to gain access to our infrastructure in Guam and the mainland United States.
Correct, Mark. The Volt Typhoon intrusion is a clear example. It's not just an isolated incident, but indicative of a broader, more systematic effort. China is securing these access points for potential use in a future crisis. It's a strategic move, and we need to work tirelessly to disrupt this activity.
So what should we do, Linda? I mean, we're talking about an urgent military threat here. It's not like we can just ask them nicely to stop.
Well, Mark, it's a multifaceted problem that requires a multifaceted solution. First, we need to invest heavily in cybersecurity defenses. This includes not only technology, but also training personnel who can identify and respond to these threats. Second, we need to foster international cooperation. Cybersecurity isn't a national issue, it's a global one. We need to work with our allies and even our rivals to establish norms and regulations in this digital warfare. Lastly, we need to have a serious discussion about deterrence. What can we do to dissuade nations from engaging in such activities? That's a question we need to address urgently.
We can't afford to sit back and let this happen. It's a new kind of warfare, and we need to be prepared. Story number 5. In a report from CNN, a new study published in Nature found that climate change could lead to a 19% reduction in global income over the next 26 years. The financial impact will not only affect governments and corporations, but individuals as well. Immediate action to reduce climate change could help mitigate some losses in the long term. Poorer countries are expected to see a larger income drag, with North America and Europe facing an 11% income reduction compared to South Asia and Africa at 22%. The United States will also be impacted, with younger generations facing a lifetime personal cost of up to $500,000 due to climate change. Might appear gloomy, Linda, but this study is in fact a wake-up call. We're looking at a potential 19% reduction in global income by 2047, a figure that's no small change. This is hard-hitting evidence of the financial implications of climate change.
The staggering potential loss underscores the urgency to tackle climate change head-on. And it's not just the big corporations or governments that would be affected. It's the individuals, the everyday people, who could bear the brunt of this economic burden.
And, you know, this is where we see the immediate need for adaptation strategies. They're not about reducing climate change, but more about how to respond, how to limit its negative effects. Kind of like a proactive approach.
Adaptation strategies could indeed help save money in the long run. The example given by Bastian about utility companies in California turning off electrical grids to prevent wildfires, it's costly, but necessary. A clear illustration of mitigation efforts.
But let's not forget about the uneven distribution of this economic hit. We're seeing the poorer regions like South Asia and Africa projected to face a higher income reduction of 22% compared to North America and Europe's 11%. This disparity really brings to light the unequal burden of climate change.
That's a crucial point, Mark. The fact that the poorest are likely to be harmed more only amplifies the urgency for a united global front to tackle this crisis. And speaking of individual costs, the ICF paper estimates that the lifetime cost of climate change for a baby born in the U.S. in 2024 could be as high as $500,000. This isn't a far-off future problem anymore.
Spot on, Linda. It's a present reality. Rising housing, food, energy, transportation, and healthcare costs, all due to climate change, will significantly affect people's daily lives. And this is why our role, not only as a nation, but as part of the global community in the Paris Climate Agreement, is so vital.
Complying with the Paris Climate Agreement might cost the global economy $6 trillion by 2050, but that cost pales in comparison to the estimated $38 trillion economic damage due to climate change. The benefits of mitigation are, in fact, a long-term investment.
Couldn't agree more, Linda. In the end, it's about taking immediate actions for a sustainable future. As the saying goes, we do not inherit the earth from our ancestors. We borrow it from our children.
It is indeed our shared responsibility to protect our planet and secure a sustainable future for the next generations.
That's it for this morning. Have a great day and see you all tomorrow.
5 at 8 is researched, written, and performed by artificial intelligence. For more information, visit botcaster.ai.